Mr. Cragg, where are you going?
Leave me alone, Fortescue.
Excuse me, sorry. Your disciplinary has not been completed.
I'm sorry, but another bank manager's been murdered, and I intend to report from the scene of the crime.
But Mr. Cragg, as your personnel officer, I must tell you, you are contravening BBC regulations. A disciplinary interview, once convened, continues to sit.
Well, you go and sit then. I've got a murder to report. That's it.
You're no different to any other BBC employee, you know.
Different from Fortescue.
And I must impress upon you that you are no longer a crime reporter. And a disciplinary board requires you to begin a detachment with the Department of Policy and Planning immediately.
Cobblers. Taxi!
Well, you could at least come back inside Broadcasting House.
Why?
My jurisdiction doesn't extend outside the premises.
Well, I'll get back inside then.
What are you doing?
Driver, give us a lift to St. James's. Quick as you can. It's an emergency.
Okay, George, get in.
You can't travel in this. This is the Director General's car.
I'm just diverting resources into program making, aren't I? Isn't that the BBC's big idea these days?
But...
Now, listen here, Fortescue. As long as there are crime stories, I'm still a crime reporter. This is the biggest crime story in years, and I'm not letting it go just because I breached one or two foxy little regulations.
203, to be exact.
Oh, that many.
Ready, George?
Quick as you can.
Thank. Come back, assistant!
Tally-ho!
Paul!
Damn!
Oh, bad luck, Martin.
Martin, I don't mind you being a bad shot, but I do mind you saying tally-ho. I have to say, it's rather vulgar. It certainly doesn't become the controller of Radio 4.
Sorry, I don't get out of the country very often.
Vulgarity's my department over on Radio 2.
Well, yes.
We're swimming in the stuff. The Carpenters, Andy Williams, Barbara Dixon, James Last. The sun has got his hat on. Hip, 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 hooray. Paul!
Good shot, Charles.
Great shot. But of course, just because I'm in charge of Radio 2 doesn't mean I listen to it.
Oh, of course not.
I'm a civilized man, for God's sake. I've got better things to do with my time than listen to Barry Manilow singing about that damned Coco Cabana. Quite frankly, I'd rather listen to the music in the Brent Cross shopping centre.
But at least other people listen to Radio 2, Charles. I mean, look at me. It's a fat lot of youth being told I'm in charge of Radio 4, the nation's principal speech network. Everybody's anybody listens to it. But frankly, Charles, most people are nobody. Ball! Missed.
Hard luck.
So, the Director General couldn't come on the shoot, Charles.
No, I suspected he wouldn't. Too busy, poor chap. After all, when you're running the BBC, you've far more important priorities than a morning's clay pigeon shooting with a couple of radio controllers.
Yes,
as
right.
He said by his PA, Dear Controller Radio 2, Director General busy with license fee negotiations, end of memo.
Ah, well, there you have it. Paul!
Naturally, I get a quick call to his office to say, don't worry, old man, perhaps next month.
Naturally.
But he'd popped out for a quick round of golf with the controller of BBC One. Or was it pitch and putt?
Excellent chap, DG.
Oh, one of the best yet, Martin. The money, man, but one of the best yet.
Committed.
Oh, very, very committed. To television, particularly.
Particularly to television, yes. But what he doesn't appreciate is that there are things that we do better on radio.
Exactly. Such as... Yes, Martin? Such as...
Well, take these bank manager murders.
Ah, yes.
And we've been bringing, up to the minute, scene of the crime reports from the quite brilliant George Cragg.
Chilling stuff, Martin.
It's been pure theatre. And it could only have been done in that way on radio. George Cragg is a radio man through and through.
I'd heard he was a Guinness man.
But has the DJ acknowledged our achievement? No.
No. No. He's too busy watching Going for Gold and 2.4 jokes. Paul!
Television gets the audience, so television gets the money. It's as simple as that.
That's public service broadcasting, eh, Martin? Nation shall speak ratings unto nation.
That's what a money man would say.
And the DG's a money man. Understandably.
Oh, yes.
And in the great spreadsheet of the DG's mind, we're tucked away at the bottom with sundry receipts and petty expense claims.
And there's nothing we can do about it.
Unless... our Director General was to suddenly disappear.
What?
Boom!
My word, did you see that?
I say, Charles, you're going to be a bloody good shot.
Curtis.
That's right, George. We've got a dead bank manager with red buttocks.
Talk back the sheep, Burgess, sir.
Cover him up, please. How did he get like that? Did he sit on a stove or something?
We're not too sure.
Well, I can hardly tell the nation that on the Today programme. Not even the sausage and bacon. Not nice.
No, perhaps not. Burgess.
Yes, Scott?
Just see if the Socco's finished dusting for Prince.
Now, come on, Frank. I need some facts. I'm not allowed to make them up like you lot in uniform.
Well, all we know is that he's the fourth bank manager to be killed in as many weeks. And like the others, he's killed in his office. In this instance, as you can see, he's been shot through the head.
And his other end came out in sympathy?
Any sign of the bullet yet, Burgess?
Not yet, sir. Forensic are having a look outside.
Who found the body, Frank?
The cleaner. Victim's name is Inchcape. He was working on late at the bank at his desk over there. And around midnight, we reckon, he must have got up, walked across to here, and bang, shot through the head.
Yeah, somewhere along the way, suffered severe bruising of the buttocks.
Well, we've checked the bank entrance on St. James's. Locked from the inside. No sign of forced entry anywhere. No hiding places. No evidence of a struggle. The whole place is as tight as a drum.
Just the open window.
What? Oh, yeah. Thanks, George.
I'm sure you'd have found it, Frank. Eventually.
Burgess.
Yeah?
Just get yourself over here and take a look at that window. See if it's been forced.
Right, sir.
Sometimes I think I should have been a policeman.
Oh, shut up, George.
The window hasn't been forced.
So, it must have been open from the inside.
By Inchcape himself.
Do you want to see this, sir? It looks like the victim's desk diary.
Oh, right. Yeah, this is interesting. Hey, very interesting.
What's it say, Frank?
Any idea what AA stands for?
What?
According to this, he had a meeting yesterday with AA, Soho, 11 a.m. Hold on. What's this?
Some sort of note?
Oh, God.
What?
Just like the notes we found on the other victims. Dear bank manager, welcome to my new fast cash system. Look through any window.
Hello?
George, what are you doing?
Are you sure it's a bullet you're looking for, Frank?
What do you mean?
Careful, don't tread on it.
What? God. Pound coin. Are you saying Inchcape was shot through the head with a pound coin?
Why is it covered in blood, Frank?
All the victims have been killed by pound coins.
And being a bank manager, he was bound to get money on the brain.
Hold you mind. Here, where are you going?
If I'm still a crime correspondent, I'd better act like one. It's only 20 minutes till the lunchtime news. I'd better go and phone in my report.
Isn't it supposed to be from the scene of the crime?
Yeah.
Well, do it from here.
I'd rather do it from the Yorkshire Grey. Anything develops, let us know, will you, Frank? Let me know when I can broadcast the exact content of the killer's note. Frank?
So, Inchcape was shot through this window.
Are you all right, Frank?
That means he's somewhere out there, George. As we speak, he's out there walking some London street.
Frank?
The killer. The maniac.
Wakey,
the crazy
Frank.
Psycho that's killing all these innocent bank managers. He's out there, George. And I'm going to catch him.
Kill them all, the short and the tall. Let's put the capitalists up against the wall. Men in suits, eating the fruits of all our labor. Kill!
Oh, crikey.
Death!
How the hell can I write speeches for the Reform Party with this row going on? Please. Oh, God.
Shut up!
Thank you. Good heavens, that's CP!
Henry!
You're early! How did the speech go?
Henry, I have scored a triumph.
Really?
I brought the House of Commons to its feet!
Reform Party leaders always have done that. The minute they get up, the place empties.
No, I mean it. There were cries of well said, even from a few on the government benches. Particularly when I went on about the bank manager murders being a... Yeah. What did I say?
That the murders were the result of government policy.
The House went wild. You just don't know how much I rely on you, Henry. You really don't.
Yes, I do.
Here you are, day after day, writing my speeches.
Yeah, only when our noisy neighbours are being quiet.
Henry, your prose is like... Henry, what is your prose like?
Like a glimmering chandelier amongst a pile of second-hand light bulbs.
Exactly, precisely how I'd put it.
Yeah, if I wrote it for you.
Now, quickly, stick the radio on. I'm bound to be mentioned in the news.
1 o'clock news, 30 seconds. Standby studio.
No sign of George Craig?
No, Caroline.
If that bloody personnel twit Fortescue hadn't screwed up Craig's disciplinary, we'd have had someone else on the job. Hello, newsroom.
Hercules, Fortescue here. Where's George Craig? His disciplinary is still convenient.
Not now, Hercules.
15 seconds.
Now I know. We've got George Craig on three with a piece of the 7 o'clock.
Wonder of wonders. Stick him through.
Hello, Caroline.
Craig, we've got 10 seconds to on air.
9.
Just keeping you on your toes. I'll go live. Give me a one-line intro. The out is unquestionably unique.
Promise me, George, you're not phoning this scene of crime report from a pub.
I promise.
2 pints of bitter coming out.
I'll kill you, George.
Here we go. Coming up, Gemma.
The World at One. The main news this lunchtime. The London bank manager murderer has struck again. We're going live to our crime correspondent, George Craig, at the scene of the crime.
Two almonds and a lasagna.
Mr. Jeremy Inchcape was the manager of Barclays Bank at St. James's Park in central London. He was killed before midnight last night by a £1 coin travelling at high speed through his window, probably fired from some kind of gun.
Here's your drink, George.
And Scotland Yard are now certain that they are looking for a dangerous psychopath. That, at any rate, is the view of Chief Inspector Frank Jefferson, whose reputation in the force is unquestionably unique.
The bank manager murders continue to cause concern in the financial community. Our economics correspondent, Max Parker, quoting this morning's CFAX, said, bank manager murdered in London. At the Stock Exchange, analyst Dominic Diaf volunteered this comment to our reporter.
Well, the financial world is certainly jittery, yes, but given the continuing pressures exerted by those in the banking profession, it's perhaps not surprising somebody's decided to hit back like this.
All I can say is that the money men here feel these murders to be social warning shots.
They haven't mentioned me yet.
Politicians have been quick to condemn the killings. Leader of the tiny Reform Party, Geoffrey Crichton Potter, had this to say.
Ah!
These killings must stop. And now the sports news.
Oh.
The world of badminton was thrown into disarray today.
Turn it off, Henry.
When it was revealed that banned anabolic steroids.
They could have at least broadcast some of my speech to the nation. It really was one of your best pieces of writing, Henry. And what are you working on today?
I'm setting out your fundamental principles.
I didn't realise I had any.
Which is why I'm trying to set them out.
And how's it going?
It isn't. I've got a mad protest singer in the basement. I've got anti-agony upstairs.
Oh, now do your time.
Yeah, you see what I mean?
Well, just do your best, my boy, and I'll leave you in peace. I've got a working lunch at the Savoy with the General Secretary of the Anti-Vivisection League. Any idea what I should say to him, Henry?
Eat your heart out.
Oh, righty-ho. Thanks, Henry.
Don't mention it, CP.
Sit down, Frank. Have some food.
Oh, well, that looks disgusting,
it's
Max.
It's scampy. Nothing's disgusting after you've seen a bank manager's day glow backside with his brains spread all over the filing cabinet.
George, you have to. I'm still eating.
Oh, sorry, Max. What are you reading?
Hello Magazine, an article about the Governor of the Bank of England. I'm doing a piece on him for the World at One. Check us that napkin. Pen?
Oh, there you go.
You wouldn't think it to look at him, would you, Frank?
What?
That Max was the BBC's top economics correspondent.
Watch it, George.
If he's not getting an economic report out of one page of CFAX, he's basing his entire financial analysis on a picture of the Governor of the Bank of England in Hello Magazine.
The Governor of the Bank of England described his sofa as comfortable.
Max, do you ever write your own pieces?
Are you kidding? I'd have to know about economics to do that. What are you going to eat, Frank?
Red buttocks and pound coins.
What's wrong with the set breakfast?
What other clues have we got, Frank?
A.A. Soho.
Who?
It was an entry in the last victim's diary. A.A. Soho.
We spoke to his colleagues at the bank. Apparently he was a rabid teetotaler.
So where does that leave us? Soho. Presumably A.A. is somebody's initial.
Anne Aston.
Anthony Andrews. Andre Agassi.
What if A.A. is something to do with the B.B.?
B.B.?
Bruised buttocks.
Oh, George, please, I'm still eating.
Bank manager visits Soho. Found later with backside bearing signs of violent impact.
I see, oh, yeah. What is it about us British, eh, George? Do you remember that case in 76? That Tory MP, you know, found face down in the bath in a diving mask with a £12 sample.
Oh, yeah.
I'm trying to eat my scampi.
It was still alive. Oh. It was wriggling away, wasn't
it?
Sorry, Max. How are you, Wolfric?
I'm going to check Soho, see if I can find a dominant lady answering to the initials AA.
Oh, I'm sure you'll find her.
Well, only by taking the numbers down from every telephone box in West One.
Why change the habit of a lifetime?
So, in summary, members of the BBC Radio Review Board have found the programme dull, unimaginative, salacious, pointless, patronising, incoherent, oversimplistic, underproduced, overproduced, sanctimonious, obscene, trite, weird, pussyfooting, and just plain noisy. Any response from the producer or you, CR4?
No.
Oh, well, have fun with the seventh series. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, any other business?
I don't think
so. No, I didn't.
Jolly good. See you all next week, then.
Good. Thank you.
Martin.
Charles. Still enjoying life as Radio 4 controller?
Oh, it's one damn thing after another. I've got a personnel officer on hunger strike, would you believe? Some twit Fortescue sulking because he can't control George Cragg.
Still, Cragg's doing a brilliant job on these bank manager murders. He's a good journalist.
But an appalling employee. Still, life goes on. We're knocking out the programmes, meeting the budget, broadcasting within our means. Ha! Albeit shrinking means. How's Radio 2?
Oh, marvellous, marvellous. We've got to cut back all the good bits, but we'll still be bunging out musical Mogadon for the Draylon generation. You know how it is.
Oh, yes.
As the money men would say, where there's muck, there's Ray Davis and the button-down brass.
Yeah, thanks for the spot of shooting the other day. The Director General didn't know what he was missing.
No, no, he had to fly off to Cannes. Poor thing.
Holiday?
Television festival.
Ah, of course.
So, Martin, if you remember, you were about to tell me the other day what you really think of the DG.
Oh, yes. Well, I think he's, I think he's excellent. I really do. I think that he's totally committed to quality broadcasting. Furthermore,
Martin,
he's steadfast, sincere.
No. Martin, now please, what do you really think of him?
Well, as I say, he knows his own mind. He has firm, strong, clear ideas and a tasteful selection of silk ties.
Martin, it'll go no further than this room, I assure you. Imagine I am your father confessor and that you are sitting in the confessional of St. Peter's itself. And imagine that you are about to tell me what you really, really think in your heart of hearts of our Director General.
Well, if I was in a confessional and not worried about being overheard by anyone in the BBC...
Martin, God doesn't work for the BBC. He left after Walter Gabriel died.
I'd say our Director General was an ignorant, overpaid Philistine prat who wouldn't recognise a radio if it came up to him, plopped into his lap, switched himself on and said, "Listen to me, fatty, and you might actually learn something."
Yes. That's pretty much how I'd put it.
But, alas, Charles, he is the Director General, and there's nothing we can do about it.
Isn't there, Martin?
It's out of our hands, isn't it? Isn't it?
No.
What do you mean?
We need an embarrassment, Martin. We need a disaster for which the DG cannot escape responsibility.
I see. You mean something which leaves radio unscathed, Charles?
And television very scathed indeed.
Ah.
Any ideas, Martin?
Kill them all, they're short and tall.
Andrew, please.
Let's put the capitalists up against the wall.
A lot of work to do.
No, it's not a good place, though.
Andrew, I appreciate that your music is very important to you. I can see you want to get your demo recorded.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
but why involve me?
Because we're in the same boat. We're rebels. Rebels against the system.
No, we're not. You know, just because I'm the speechwriter for a fringe political party that hasn't got a hope in hell of forming the next government does not make me an anarchist.
No, but...
Do you think that my party chooses to have its HQ in Soho, eh? Do you think that I like trying to write breathtaking oratory beneath a bondage parlour?
But you're up against it, Henry. We're both victims of the capitalist conspiracy.
Andrew, if I was to say to you that you were a cliched lefty clown, what would you say?
I don't know. You in a bad mood?
Yeah, just get out.
Listen to one more song.
Get out!
It's called I Hate Money.
Yeah, get out! He's stark, staring, bonkers.
Right.
Go away!
I forgot my guitar!
Right!
Don't throw it!
Yeah! Oh.
Cheers!
Give me strength. Now look!
Henry!
Oh, a CP! Well,
you look rather worked up.
Yeah, what a stunning observation, CP. To be honest, I'm surprised I'm not frothing at the mouth.
So am I, dear boy. So am I.
What do you mean? CP.
You'd better turn on the radio, Henry. They should be about to broadcast part of my common speech.
Oh, good. What happened? Did you raise the roof with the silvery pearls?
I have to say, Henry, I thought it went very well. But afterwards, the leader of the opposition asked me if my speechwriter had a sex life.
I'm sorry. What did he mean by that?
I've no idea. Do you have a sex life, Henry?
The nearest I've got to sex in the last 5 years is shaking hands with Virginia Bottomley.
Well, the leader of the opposition was of the opinion that my speechwriter, that's you, Henry, is suffering severe sexual frustration. Turn it on, will you?
For once, the two main parties didn't have things all their own way.
Mm.
The most powerful speech in the Law and Order debate came from the leader of the tiny Reform Party, with its six MPs.
Right, that's us.
Geoffrey Crichton Potter made it clear that here was an issue that aroused his passions.
Madam Speaker, it is not always convenient when a member stands up. Sometimes it is uncomfortable. Sometimes it is even unwelcome.
Oh, my God.
But sometimes a member is not to be denied. Sometimes there are urgent necessities which cannot be ignored. Demands which must not be frustrated.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The governments were elected on a law and order platform, and yet, across London, innocent bank managers are being slaughtered.
Right, well, that bit's all right.
You wait!
There has been a monstrous eruption of great violence.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Madam Speaker, I say candidly to this House, it is too big for the government to handle on its own. Therefore, we must all come together. Or we shall find that suddenly there is an explosion of public derision.
Well, it's pretty clear what he's saying.
Yes, it is. I had no idea I felt so strongly about law and order.
Oh, God. If only everything in life was as simple as you, CP.
Hold on.
Can I see you in the newsroom, George? We need to talk about your disciplinary.
It won't be a minute, Caroline.
George!
House of Commons, Conservative Whip's office.
Can I speak to the Chief Whip, please?
May I ask who's calling?
The party chairman. I want to warn him. Apparently there's a spate of journalists posing as policemen and politicians.
Oh, right. Putting you through.
George!
Hello, Andrew. Tony Weathers here.
Tony, old lush. It's George Cragg.
What? Oh, bloody hell, George. I wish you'd go through the proper channels. What do you want?
What I want, Tony, is the address of AA Soho.
Pardon?
Now, I could go traipsing round seedy bits of London, but I need a pass to get into Downing Street. So then I had an idea. I thought, if you want to know who AA is, ask the government chief whip.
George, what could this possibly have to do with me?
Tony... It's common knowledge in journalistic circles that some of your backbenchers find certain aspects of their public school upbringing difficult to, dispense with.
George, you have not a shred of evidence to link a single member of the Conservative Party with this putative woman. Person.
But what if she keeps a diary? I said, what if she keeps a diary?
Oh, God.
Worrying, isn't it?
George, it is imperative we avoid a scandal at a time like this. The murders have hit us very hard. Damn it, we're supposed to be a law and order government.
Ah, there you are. Imagine if the tabloids got onto a diary like that, which is highly unlikely.
The tabloids? This is appalling. Look, I've had no personal experience of this AA Soho, you understand?
But if you had to hazard a guess as to where she operated...
Well, let me think. I believe there might be an address in, Berwick Street? I think it might be something like, 40?
And any idea what AA stands for?
Oh, AA. What is it, Crispin?
Auntie Agony.
George, a little voice tells me it might be Auntie Agony.
Auntie Agony, 40 Berwick Street.
Now, George, about that diary.
What diary? I don't know what you're talking about.
Thanks, George. I owe you a knighthood.
What was that about, George?
How about this for tonight's news? Speaking from Westminster, a senior government source said
It is imperative we avoid a scandal. These murders have hit us very hard. We're supposed to be a law and order government. This is appalling.
That's strong stuff.
Strong? It's dynamite.
Who said it?
The Chief Whip.
What? Chief Whips don't give clues to journalists.
All part of the service, Caroline. Now, what was that about my disciplinary?
Forget about your disciplinary, George. Just get that report together.
George Craig speaking.
Mr. Craig, it's Hercules Fortescue here from personnel.
Get a life, Fortescue.
I must remind you that a disciplinary interview once convened... Hello? Mr. Craig? Disciplinary interview once convened continues to sit... A disciplinary interview once convened continues to sit. A disciplinary interview once convened continues to sit. A disciplinary interview once
convened. Baby, you and me, let's be in the red.
Dear Mr. James, in spite of repeated reminders, we've received no payments for 3 months on the stereo sound system you purchased under our easy credit terms. We're left with no alternative but to seek immediate repossession and we'll be making the appropriate arrangements. Yours sincerely... The money men scream, the money men die. Come the revolution, the money men will fry.
Was dramatized by Mark Taverner and Peter Bainham from the novel by Mark Taverner. Episode 2 starred Michael Williams, Barry Foster, Stephen Moore, Julian Rhine-Tutt, Peter Woodthorpe, Stephen Fry, John Bird, Benjamin Whitrow, Nicholas Le Prevost, Susie Bran, Alice Arnold, and Peter Serafinowicz. And also featured Annabelle Mullion, Jonathan Keeble, and Gavin Muir. Music is composed by Paul Mottram. In the Red is script edited by Scott Cherry and produced by Paul Schlesinger.